This is the Jewish News Podcast in association with Genesis Philanthropy Group, supporting Jewish communities worldwide. I'm Michael Daventry, and coming up on this programme, we speak to Israel's new diaspora minister, Nachman Shai, who says he's returning to listening mode after a decade of governments led by Benjamin Netanyahu. Is there a natural limit to what Israel's fragile coalition can deliver for Jews who live in other countries, or should they be expecting more? A recurring theme in the Jewish News Podcast is about how Jewish communities around the world are going through a period of transition. We often talk about it in relation to the Holocaust. This is the week of Holocaust Memorial Day, or International Holocaust Remembrance Day, marking the anniversary of the liberation of Auschwitz. But this year, there are fewer survivors than ever before to mark it. Soon, there will be none. So when we talk about a period of transition, we do it because a key part of Jewish history is fading from living memory. Jewish communities everywhere are talking about how to preserve that memory, that awful legacy, to keep the story alive without first-hand witnesses being there to tell it. Another area of transition is with Israel. The world's only Jewish state was founded in the aftermath of the Holocaust, and no one can dispute its successes in overcoming political, military, and environmental adversity over the past eight decades. And the bond between Israel and Jewish communities around the world is a strong one. Synagogues everywhere offer prayers for the country and its people every Shabbat, and there are millions who are reassured at a time when anti-Semitism is on the rise that a safe haven for Jews does exist in the world. Yet there's no doubt that diaspora support for Israel is going through a period of transition. In the nearly 74 years since the country was founded, a majority of the world's Jews have chosen to live outside Israel. They haven't explored their rights under the law of return. Then there's Israel's treatment of the Palestinians, or the multiple allegations of corruption and fraud under governments led by Benjamin Netanyahu, or the perception that Israel's brand of Judaism is more orthodox and less progressive than the diaspora. For many British Jews, all these are fueling not necessarily disillusionment, but certainly a readjustment of their attitudes towards the world's only Jewish state. Now, of course, Benjamin Netanyahu has been out of office for half a year, and in his place is a government of the broadest coalition of parties Israel has ever seen. I'm delighted that Israel's diaspora minister Nachman Shai, a minister from the Israeli Labour Party and the man responsible for his country's relationship with Jewish communities everywhere, is joining us for his first major interview with the British Jewish media. Minister, thank you for your time. I really wanted to begin with that last point. The government you replaced, the one that was led by Benjamin Netanyahu, has created a lot of difficulties for Israel as a brand, hasn't it?
Thank you, Michael, for the opportunity to address the Jewish community in Britain and to address your newspaper. Let me tell you what I feel uncomfortable about. I'm very critical of Netanyahu's too long term as a prime minister of Israel, but I'm very careful not to do it out of the country's borders. That's my naivete as a politician. You see, I can get headlines for that, but I'm very careful. I believe this should stay within the framework of our life in Israel. But yet, I would not leave this question unanswered. Yes, mistakes were committed by the previous government in general and in particular in the Jewish world. I believe that not much attention was given to Jews living out of the country. I think that my diaspora, my ministry on diaspora affairs was not treated nicely by previous governments. We should have been given a higher budget for our operation and to focus much more on Jewish life. And more than everything else, I believe that we should be, that's actually the primary goal of my present position, is to listen to you. I just came back from the United States for a week. They called this trip a listening tour in the United States. Any audience I met, I asked them, what can I do for you? What, on behalf of the state of Israel, what Israel can do for you. And I want to reach to a point where we will have a dialogue, not a monologue. No longer, you said rightly that the Jewish life today are different than they were 40 or 60 years ago from the day of independence generation, the Israel independence generation, or even the one after. Things are totally different now. We have to invest much more on Jewish life out of Israel. We are now the largest Jewish community in the world. There's no any longer discussion about who is bigger. We are, and that comes with responsibility for Jewish life out of Israel. We can't do everything, and we are not going to send our troops to help Jews in the diaspora, Sayeret Matkal, no more Entebbe. But yes, we can help through states, through NGOs, through public opinion, and sometimes directly. The paradigm is a new one and different than it used to be. Don't ask any longer what the diaspora is doing for us, but ask, that's what I tell my colleagues in the government, what are we doing for them?
That's a very pithy turn of phrase. So you say that you've been on a listening exercise in the United States. I'm sure when the opportunity permits, you'll be in Britain as well to do similar things. Among the groups you might meet are groups like Yahad and Na'amod, very active youth organizations, Jewish youth organizations here, who are very uncomfortable for all of the reasons I listed in my introduction and others about Israel, even though they attend synagogue and they pray for Israel every Saturday. Is that the general, would you say that is an increasingly louder voice from what you've heard so far from America?
Absolutely. Absolutely. Any conversation, any discussion I've had with Americans and American Jews started and ended with the future of their life as Jewish community, and mainly on what is going on with the new generation of American Jews. Hundreds of thousands of them are studying in a variety of universities and campuses, the best of the best. And we are just doing everything we can. I haven't started it, but I increased our operation within American campuses. And it applies also to Jews living out of America, in the United, in Europe and elsewhere. And we're going to do much more. What we feel now, the what you described us as the new streams in the Jewish in British Jewry or elsewhere within the, especially with the young generation, is a result of previous years that nothing has been done or too little has been done to make them grow as Jews on the one hand, and with strong ties and linkage to Israel, to Zionism, to develop their Zionist identity. And don't be shy. This is what we're all about. This is the story of Zionism here. This is the great success of the Jewish people in the 20th century, to alleviate the Zionist movement to a state. We achieved the goal of the Zionist movement, and they, I believe, should be proud of it. And now there are questions, many questions. For example, you haven't mentioned it yet, on the Palestinian issue. What's going on with the Palestinians? Why do you keep controlling their life? Why are you still occupying them? What's going on with you? Why don't you finally end this long conflict between you and them? I have answers for that. And I encourage them to ask the questions or those questions in order to let me answer them. And all those young people, Jews and non-Jews, deserve to get our answer. And previous generations took everything from Israel for granted. It's no longer the case. Questions are coming up. Doubts are coming up. Hesitations. All kinds of feelings with Israel. They are all legitimate. They are all relevant. And here I am on the other side of the Mediterranean or the ocean, taking control, answering them, doing my best.
Yeah.
Convince those young people that Israel is still democratic, diverse. There is social justice in Israel. This is the moral state. And even in our relationship with the Palestinians, which I have my own solution for, we still conduct our affairs according to the international law and even morally. Yes, morally.
I do want to get onto the Palestinian issue and the solutions that you talk about, but I just want to stay briefly on this theme of a growing transition, as I keep calling it, or a disconnect with particularly younger Jews. You touched on the last 10 years and the last 15, 20 years, perhaps, of Israeli governments successively taking diaspora Jews for granted. Compounded to that, added to that, was the problem of COVID, wasn't it? And the fact that so many youth groups have been unable to visit Israel because Israel shut its borders. That didn't help, did it?
Well, I had a long discussion, happened to have a long discussion last night for almost 2 hours, very late in the evening, with the Whiskey Club. Have you ever heard about the Whiskey Club?
The Whiskey Club, no.
Well, there is a club of a few hundred British Jews. Very nice people, but they were all, most of them were so angry at me, I was a little bit upset, to be honest with you, that the country was or still closed for them. First of all, we removed all the obstacles, all of them, all the restrictions. As long as you are vaccinated, come to Israel. Now it's your choice whether you would like to come or not, but that's something different. During the beginning of this, or the first almost 2 years of the corona period, I would say, historically, we closed the country. Or we didn't let everyone to come and enter Israel from good reasons. Our first priority is to protect the Israelis. Our second priority to let the country running, to let the economy continue, to let the school system work. That's what we try to do. It wasn't easy. It's still not easy. I know many people paid the price for that, both in Israel and out of the country. I have a lot of love and affection to those British Jews that asked me very emotionally, why don't you let us in? We want to visit our children and grandchildren and look at our property and our investment in Israel. And by the way, we just love the country. We just want to come to Israel. We've been educated to love the country. And now when we want to, let's say, practice this friendship and this love, you close the border and say, you're not allowed to come in. So as I said before, sorry for that. We don't underestimate your love to Israel. We appreciate it very much. But this is not the right time. At this stage, the country is open. I address all of you. Jews, the British Jews, come to Israel. We would like very much to see you in the country.
Has the damage been done, though? Is there a lot to fix when it comes to younger Jews, older Jews, non-Israeli Jews who haven't been able to visit over the last years and have become distanced from Israel? Has any damage been done?
I guess. I'm afraid, yes. From last night conversation, there is a damage. It was not just the usual conversation, a nice one, I would say, and it wasn't even a little bit not too polite, okay? Which is fine, because I felt like people are upset, very upset with Israel, as if we broke something in the traditional friendship between them and us. And I promised to them, and I committed myself to continue my own almost personal struggle within the cabinet now and in the future, because Corona is not over yet. Omicron is maybe out, some other variant will come in, that we will apply different set of principles or a policy for Jews who would like to come to the country. It's not similar to other people, Jews or non-Jews. We have to find ways that those who have center of their life or semi-center of their life in Israel will be allowed to come to the country as long as they are vaccinated. So they have to adapt to the Israeli criteria. But otherwise, we have to treat them differently than others.
Hmm. Okay, let's talk about an area where there is another area that's left some damage. The Kotel, the Western Wall, where you will know just as well as everyone, in fact better, the long and difficult history that we've had over the last 5 or 10 years when it comes to the question of egalitarian prayer spaces, the idea of allowing men and women to pray alongside each other if they choose to do so at the holiest site in Judaism. And it is, I know you will know, that it's a bigger demand for Jews outside of Israel than it is inside. But one of the predecessors for your role, a man called Naftali Bennett, who's now the Prime Minister, he was involved in a major agreement which was meant to take steps towards resolving this. But we've been hearing in recent weeks from reports from Israel from one of your colleagues in government, from Matan Kahana, suggesting that the agreement isn't going to be implemented after many, many years of being frozen under the Netanyahu government. What's your position? Do we need an egalitarian prayer space now?
No doubt. We will have, I myself and my party and my, at least a half of coalition from center-left, but not also from center-left, but also some, most of the center-right members of the coalition support the 2016 Kotel outline, designed, by the way, in the Netanyahu's cabinet. I actually see my major role now is how to apply Netanyahu's outline to the Kotel, how bad it can be. That's exactly what I'm going, and I give him the credit for that. It was a perfect agreement. The only point is that a year after it was endorsed by the government, it was postponed by the government or suspended by the government, and since then nothing has been done. We are committed to let Reform and conservative Jews to come and pray in the Kotel, in their own pavilion, in the southern part of the Kotel, where in an area which actually was built and prepared for them by the Prime Minister of Israel, at the time the Minister of Education, Minister on the Diaspora Affairs. He did that, he prepared this area as a minister in the government, and for 4 days, last few hours. He's very proud about that. He keeps telling that everywhere he can. And I said to him the other day, Naftali, now you should also complete the job. That's it. You were there at the beginning, and now you have to end the job and make it possible for everyone to come to the Kotel. Our approach to the Jewish world in general, and particularly to the three streams or denominations, is that they are all equal. Every Jew, man or woman, who come to the Kotel can make up his or her mind. I go to the left, which means to the Orthodox one. I can go to the right, which means doesn't fit exactly political views. I can go to the right side and to the small, much smaller area, which is dedicated for the Reform and conservative egalitarian pray. Men and women pray together. And I'd like every Jew to choose where to go. That's what pluralism and freedom is all about.
Mm. Equality is an important word in that, but isn't this a multifaceted issue? It's not just the political issue, of there being left and right-wing parties in government, and some are very uncomfortable about this deal over the Kotel, even though it was agreed by Benjamin Netanyahu in his time in government. It feels a little bit like there's an issue in wider Israeli society, and the reason I say that is because I'm thinking, you'll remember this incident back in June last year when the Women of the Wall went to the Kotel to pray, where they were accosted by a group of strictly Orthodox men, young boys, who didn't just try to stop them from praying. They took their prayer books, they tore them up. They said things like books of heretics and we are obliged to burn, which was a horrific incident. And many people have condemned it widely, including yourself. But the wider issue that I'm trying to point at here is that nobody was charged under that incident. We were talked about police investigating. This was captured live on video. There is an issue, isn't there, in Israeli society when it comes to a more conservative, a more orthodox approach to Judaism, which seems to be dominant over progressive.
the Kotel should be open for and available for everyone. That's the basic attitude of the present government, all the government. If I bring this topic to the cabinet tomorrow, and if we vote on that, I'll have 90%, if not 100% of the members of the government supporting that. It's a matter of time or timing. I disagree with the Prime Minister, I have to tell you, very honestly. I disagree with him that he hasn't brought it to an end so far. And we lose time. And there is no reason for that. No reason for that. I see no reason whatsoever. And we continue to press the Prime Minister and some other government ministers, but mainly it's about him to bring it to a vote and to complete. And it's not too much work, by the way, everything in that very area, which is dedicated to the reform, to the egalitarian area in the southern part of the Kotel. As I said before, it's our commitment. Doesn't matter if I go on Shabbat, I go to an Orthodox shul not far from my home. But at the same time, I'd like every Jew, to enjoy the freedom of decision where to go, here or there. That tells the story of Israel now. There is no separation between religious and state, and that's one of the diseases of Israel. Maybe one day we should correct it as well, but it's not. That wouldn't happen in this cabinet or in this government. Yes, but by the way, we have been able to do so many goods for Israel. So we have, if we haven't done that this time, we'll do it next time. I promise you.
Regarding anti-Semitism, the rise of anti-Semitism, you've hinted at this a little bit earlier. You've spoken in recent days about Israel having a moral obligation to assist Jewish communities around the world as they fight rising cases of anti-Semitism. The statistics show that it's rising everywhere, in the United States, here in Britain, Germany, France. The list, sadly, is endless. Is that a sign of the theme that we've been talking about, I guess, throughout this interview, that we are in this period of transition and the rise of anti-Semitism brings responsibilities on Israel to try and combat it?
Well, the first is that what happened this year. The question is what happened this year, and the answer is the military operation Guardian of War last May, which brought about a new wave, a new spike of anti-Semitism all around the world, including Britain, as you know, hundreds of percent high than a year before or even the few months before. Why did it happen? Around this military operation, the criticism towards Israel rose, and it encouraged people either within the government, the public opinion, many social and ethnic circles, to stand against Israel, to come up and criticize Israel. And in this case, the border between criticism and anti-Semitism were blurred and wasn't that clear any longer. And it easily became anti-Semitism. The question of where is anti-Semitism and where is just criticism was not clear any longer. And another dimension, which is totally new, and it was proved again during this year, is the social media networks, the huge technological companies that actually a few months before, during the American election campaign, proved that if they want, they can. And when it came to Trump, they proved that they can clean or sign or find ways to alert their audience that this message is fake or this message needs more information. And sometimes they even removed messages or content from the flow of information on the network. They can do it. And we urge them, and we still will do it more and more, and we press on, put more pressure on them to behave the same or to take the same policy when it comes to anti-Semitism. They claim they do, but practically they do very little, hiding beyond the wall of freedom of expression and so on and so forth. For me, it doesn't say a lot. It means that they are just running away from their own responsibility for the content of those social media content. And I'm very happy to see that we are not alone in this struggle. I think that the European Union itself, well, you withdraw from the European Union, but still watching Europe, right? And you watching what's going on there. So the European Union presented a 10-year plan to combat anti-Semitism and to foster Jewish life in Europe this few months ago in Malmo. And this is a good sign because actually they say that they are committed to combat anti-Semitism in all kinds of forms, including anti-Israelism and anti-Zionism and so on and so forth. Again, we have this new definition for anti-Semitism, which is connected to those efforts as well. So a lot has been done, a lot will be done, and I believe that Israel should not just defending itself or protecting ourselves, but we should take much more proactive attitude and to put Israel on the first line of world states combating anti-Semitism. This is what Israel is all about. Is combating anti-Semitism and defending the Jewish people all around the world.
It's not just about social media companies as well, though, is it? The forces of populism, and that was a big problem here in Britain in the last 5 years when the main opposition party was captured
our sister party.
Exactly.
Labor.
Well, this is exactly what I was going to ask you about, because your party, the Israeli Labour Party, severed its ties with the British Labour Party because of Jeremy Corbyn's leadership, and relationships have since been repaired. What's your assessment of British Labour now that Corbynism is theoretically in the past?
Well, this is a new Labour Party. As far as I'm, as far as I see, there's a new leadership there, new leaders, a new atmosphere within the party. It seems like they put behind the Corbyn period with what the damage has been done to the party as a whole and to the Jewish members or Jewish supporters of the Labour Party. I'm not getting into British internal politics. That's something that shouldn't be done. But in general, I'm telling you, I feel that this was the right thing to do. And now, we are back in, renewed our relations with the Labour Party, which is, again, very close to us. We wish them all the best, whatever is the future, political future of them. But the major message from our point of view, don't let any more to all kind of anti-Semitic messages and behavior to control British politics. Either this party or that party, doesn't matter. Check out anti-Semitism from your life. Conduct all kinds of political discussions without relating specifically to Jews or to Jewish issues, which was done in the past and has no room in any political discussion.
And another aspect of populism, I suppose, is when government is, and Poland was an example of that, because there have been many historical issues, which we don't have time to get into with you right now, with Poland and its relations with Jewish communities and with Israel regarding Holocaust restitution and compensation. But there was hope about 6 months ago when the Polish government appointed an envoy, a diplomat, to try and improve its relations with the Jewish community. Up until earlier this month, when we at the Jewish News interviewed him, and he criticised one of Poland's laws, and he was fired. That kind of thing is a shame, isn't it, for trying to improve a country like Poland, which has many historical issues with Jews and with Israel, if they don't have somebody who's there to actually try and improve dialogue?
When it comes to Poland, you don't have to teach me too much, because I can just turn the camera to my wall in the room, and you'll see pictures of my grandfather Zvi and my grandmother Rosa and my aunt Nechama, which I proudly carry her name. Nachman comes from Nechama, and they were all Polish citizens. And they were all murdered by the Nazis on Polish soil. So I fully support the policy taken by our foreign minister when it comes to Poland. We wouldn't let Poland and wouldn't let the Polish people to hide into their responsibility, a partial responsibility to what happened in the war. Yes, they were not, they did not initiate the Holocaust, but they were there when it happened, and many Poles helped the Nazis as well. And also since then, there were many issues about property and about the memory of the Shoah and the attempts to claim that Poland suffered itself, which may be true, but it doesn't mean anything when it comes to the 6 million Jews, out of them 3 million, which were murdered on Polish soil, and many of them by Poles. What can we say about that? And that's part of the that's a new version of Holocaust denial, right? You try to play with the fact, you try to play the story, building on the fact that most of the Holocaust survivors are not any longer with us. 75, 80 years have passed since then. Okay, so we can rewrite history now. We can rewrite the history for the future generation. As long as I'm here and millions of Jews, and non-Jews, by the way, not necessarily Jews, are around, we'll continue the same spirit. We would not let anyone deny Holocaust. We will not let anyone to rewrite the history, neither Poles nor anyone else in Europe and elsewhere. This is our commitment as Israelis, as Jews, as citizens of the first and the only Jewish state on earth.
Can things improve with Poland relationships?
Will it be better? Yes, I guess they will be better. They will be will improve in the future. But for the time being, it's not that close as far as I can see. There's so much work to do and to look at their legislation, the new bills they passed, their attitude toward Holocaust researchers, and the bills they're relating to Jewish property and so on. It seems like they try to leave the Holocaust behind and say, okay, let's start new life. It doesn't work like that. We are not going to forget and we are not going to forgive.
Mm. Finally, I promised I'd come back to this, and you seemed very willing to talk about this. You don't need a lecture from me or anyone really about the Palestinian issue and Israel's treatment to the Palestinians and events in the West Bank and in Gaza. But you say that there is a way forward, or at least you hinted that there was a way forward. Surely that's impossible under a government like the one that you're in, which has such a diverse range of parties and views.
Yes. It is not possible in the near future as long as we sit together in the same cabinet room where half of the cabinet is for annexation and half of the government is for full withdrawal based on two nation states for two people. Not full withdrawal, almost full withdrawal from the West Bank. We know what we agree on and we know what we disagree on. And on this matter, on this issue, which is very central to our life here, we decided not to decide, not for the foreseeable future. I know it may disappoint many people around the world, including Britain, but that's the way it is. We were able to pass a budget. We are able to pass over 30 reforms so far. We are able to work together, center, right, and left. All of us, eight parties, including an Arab party for the first time in Israel history, a very diverse cabinet that every supporter of social justice and democracy will be part of. But at the same time, when it comes to this issue, but yes, we have also kind of responsibility for the Palestinian life, and we have to make sure to do every effort we can that they will live a normal life, regular life, that they will be well off, that they will have employment, that they will have food and water and standards of living like any other man and woman on earth, like the Israelis. And this is our responsibility. We would like them to be safe, not to be attacked, but not to attack as well, as long as they don't participate on any terror activity against Israel. They should be safe, and we wouldn't let anyone, neither settlers nor any other Israeli, to attack them, to interfere in their life, to stop them on the roads, to attack them in their fields. No, this is against Israel law, and this is against Jewish morale, and we are going to do that. And that's one of the reasons I'm in the cabinet now, to make sure that we and them will be able to live together peacefully, side by side, Jews and Arabs, together, together, and in different and separate states at the time, because this is the only solution that I can see for this long time conflict. But until we got to this point, and it seems like we still have a long way to go, they should be safe and should enjoy full and a prosperous life under Israeli government as much as it is now.
I'm sure we could go on, but Dr. Shai, we are out of time. Nachman Shai, Israel's Minister for Diaspora Affairs, thank you very much for joining this week's edition of the Jewish News Podcast.
Thank you. Thank you, Michael, and best regards from Israel to the Jewish to the British Jewish community, and I wish them safe and healthy life and a lot of success.
And that's it for this edition of the Jewish News Podcast in association with Genesis Philanthropy Group. Through its partners, GPG is working to support the growth of Jewish community life in the UK and worldwide. To find out more, visit gpg.org or search for Genesis Philanthropy Group. All that's left for me to do is to thank the Minister, Nachman Shai, Leo Mendel and Adam Bradley for their work producing this episode, and to you for listening. Please do subscribe to the show in your podcast app. It really helps to make sure that you hear any previous episodes and also lets you know when new episodes are available. Also, don't forget that for more information on any of the stories that we featured, you can go to jewishnews.co.uk where there's a wealth of information. And if you'd like to comment, then we'd love to hear from you on editorial@jewishnews.co.uk. But for now, from me, Michael Daventry, do join us next time here on the Jewish News Podcast. Goodbye.